Greatest Enemy, written by Douglas Riemann and read by David Rintoul.
Author's note. Over recent years, there have been several cases where individual captains have been criticised, even reprimanded, for using what they consider to be their right of initiative and personal judgment. Yet in time of war, where would a nation's security lie? If a captain cannot demand unquestioning loyalty from his subordinates and the respect for his integrity from his superiors, it might be argued that future strategy will be decided by a computerised bureaucracy which will allow for little beyond the talent and skill of a limited few. A case which came to my attention when I was researching for this book was that of an American officer, Lieutenant Commander Marcus Arnheiter, who, after being in command of the radar picket destroyer Vance off Vietnam, was relieved of his appointment without trial or warning. The Vance was a notoriously slack ship, and Arnheiter, within the short span of 99 days, set to work to put her to rights, to restore discipline and efficiency where it was most needed. On the face of the available evidence, it would seem that his main crime was his eagerness to serve his country, to take his ship where she would be of the most use and purpose. His zeal, it appears, was not shared by some of his officers, and the way in which the captain was destroyed would not seem out of place in Wook's Caine Mutiny. The Arnheiter affair, as it came to be known, was one of the worst naval disputes of the decade, and until some sort of ruling is made to prevent its happening again, there will be many captains who might be tempted to hold back when they are most needed. The command structures of the American and British navies are different, but basically the ideals and traditions which have guided and moulded them over the years are very similar. My story is, and must be, fiction, but the questions are still there. Was the captain of the Terrapin a fool, or one whose real strength lay in his pride of country and his own beliefs? If pride is indeed an enemy, then surely so too must be complacency. Chapter 1. Change of Command. The towering sides of the fleet supply ship shone in the blazing sunlight like polished granite, and while her derricks swung busily above two frigates moored alongside, the seamen employed on deck moved with equal vigour, if only to end the work and escape to the shade of their messes. It was halfway through the forenoon watch, and already the searing heat across Singapore's wide naval anchorage had rendered movement, even thought, an unbearable effort. There was not any sort of breeze, and scattered at their buoys, the moored warships seemed to crouch beneath their taut awnings, etched clearly above their motionless reflections, like part of a vivid seascape. But it was Sunday, and only aboard the supply ship and the two frigates taking on stores was there any sign of activity. A few gaunt junks idled on the sluggish current, but without wind in their strange, bat-light sails, it was hard to tell if they were anchored or making a feeble attempt to quit the harbour. In his cabin below the bridge of the outboard frigate, Lieutenant Commander Rex Standish lay naked on his bunk, staring up at the deckhead fan. It was quite motionless, and already he could feel the air thickening in the small compartment, bringing with it the usual irritation and frustration. He raised one hand towards the bulkhead telephone, the small movement fetching a rush of sweat to his chest and armpits, and then changed his mind. What was the point? The fans, like just about everything else, broke down too often for comment. He wedged his hands beneath his dark, unruly hair and closed his eyes, trying to clear his mind from the fog of heavy drinking left over from the previous night's party. It should have been a double celebration. Bob Mitford, the captain, was flying home to England, and he, Rex Standish, executive officer and first lieutenant of the frigate Terrapin, had reached his 30th birthday. Some heavy tackle clattered across the deck overhead, and he swore silently. The party had been more like a wake than a celebration, with drinks getting larger every minute and speech becoming almost incoherent. And early this morning, when he had seen Mitford over the side for the last time, without fuss or ceremony, and with most of the ship's company still in their hammocks, he had tried to find the words, both to thank him and to ease his lonely flight back to England. Instead, they had just shaken hands, and the work of getting alongside the supply ship had pushed the other nagging thoughts to the back of his mind, until now.